actual fuck is going on with this whole politics business?
And the stuff about me paddleboarding, nonsense. The sea was actually closed. It was a red notice.
When Kermit the Frog sang, "It's not easy being green." Do you remember that one?
Russia should go away, should shut up.
Try that.
Who's been to Peppa Pig World?
In December, I'll be in Beijing, opening up new pork markets.
Like, seriously, what the fuck? Hiya, it's me, Jennifer Wan, and this is a brand new episode of What the Actual Fuck is Going On with This Whole Politics Business. And as per usual, there is a lot fucking going on. We've had so much drama. The biggest drama, of course, is the Sue Gray report coming out this week. We're going to get into that and a whole bunch of other stuff in just a second. So get comfy, grab some snacks, grab a drink, and get ready to get mad as fuck. Because we both know that's how it's going to end. We both know that. This is our lives now. Getting mad at our incompetent, ridiculous government. But at least we're doing it together. Love that for us. Okay, so before we get into the Sue Gray of it all, I wanted to talk about this because... We can consider this like a, you know, the Sunday night heat before the Partygate WrestleMania, if you will. I saw this clip and I thought, well, this is it. I live in hell now, you know. Or to keep it topical, I am in the upside down. I'm not going to say spoilers. I'm not, I promise. But I have watched all of the new Stranger Things. And oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. I don't know if I can make it until July for the newer episodes. I just... Anyway. But I'm not going to give you spoilers. Don't worry. But this video... It has confirmed my long-held belief that we need to shut down TikTok because for whatever good may be coming from that platform, there is a lot of evil, dark-sided evil. And perhaps the most dark-sided evil thing I have seen on that platform is this video clip from Nadine Dorries.
This is how we're improving online safety. The UK is passing some new legislation to make the internet safer for the younger generation. It's effectively a framework to protect internet users from scams, illegal content and anonymous abusers. It will force big tech to stop their terms being breached and puts in measures to defend free speech. But is it true it will impact freedom of expression? No, we put in legal protections in the 19th section. Another thing we're doing to the laws we're passing is tackling online crime and cyber flashing. If companies fail to comply with the law, fail to protect the users that they're responsible for, the regulator Ofcom will have the power to fine. So platforms must keep people safe online.
I want to go back in time to the day that Nadine Dorries was elected and became a Member of Parliament. And I want to show the voters that video. And I want to say, is this what you want to inflict on the world? And then my hope is they will all go and vote for somebody else, because what the fucking hell is that? What the actual fuck? God. Not this, my name is Nadine and I'm here to say nonsense. God, no. We live in hell. This is our lives now. I don't know what we all did, but we must have done something real bad for this to be the timeline. You know what I mean? I'm all for like minimum ages on social media, but I'm starting to think there should be a maximum age. Because like, I know that there are some like wholesome, like older people on social media platforms making adorable content, but for every cute older person making wholesome content, there is a Nadine Doris. Do you know what I mean? And I can't, not this. That video made me feel that the internet was unsafe. Shut it down. Shut the whole internet down. Shut TikTok down. Shut the internet down. Shut the city of Liverpool down, because they have somehow allowed this woman out and now she is here everywhere. And I'm frightened. I don't want this. Why, man? Oh, God. There's also a lovely treat this week from the Daily Doris account. If you're not sure what that is, it's a Twitter account sharing little bits of Nadine Doris's books. Nadine Doris, the culture secretary, is constantly committing crimes against culture, it would seem. She's doing shit raps on TikTok and she's writing things like this. This is from her book, The Mothers of Lovely Lane. He wanted her to be in control, and so she lost her virginity, not as she had imagined she would, but astride him, with him holding her hips, gently guiding her. And then he moved one of his hands onto her, and she could bear it no longer, as she crashed down. Okay. As she crashed down onto him and let out a noise she was unaware she had made, until he said, "Shh, tiger." I wish I was dead. "Shh, tiger, you will bring the other doctors running in with a stretcher, wondering what on earth is going on." And instead of feeling embarrassed and shy, she collapsed off him and onto her side, laughing. He pulled her onto him. "Did you make that noise too?" she asked. "The only noise I'm making is a howl of sadness." Oh, good God. I think this may have been a little prelude to that horror. "Just as her knees gave way, he moved her backwards and lowered her onto the bed." Does Nadine Doris not actually understand how people move? Like, everything she writes about sex makes me think that she's never had sex, which I know is impossible because she has children, but like, come on. Was she just not paying attention during it, or like what? He undid the buttons of her skirt and slipped it over her hips and down her legs and off with such deft speed that Beth lifted her head and gasped. She was determined to lose her virginity to this man. There is nothing sexy or seductive about when she writes about that kind of thing either. Like, girl, I don't even like having sex with men, but I can make it sound sexy and seductive and playful and fun and stuff like that. Like, how is this happening, man? Girl. She's making TikTok. She's writing terrible, terrible books. I've just seen another one. Oh, this is lovely. "Since he and Austin had become involved in the group to which Arthur had introduced them, they often talked about the legalising of their own inclination. Stanley had even gone by coach with Austin and Arthur to a meeting in London about the very thing. Times were changing. Arthur never stopped saying, 'Homos will be legal soon. We will be next.'" Wait for it. "Soon paedophiles, like themselves, would be protected by the law just as homosexuals would soon be. This they firmly believed." Now, some people might say, oh, it's just an innocent passage in a book. You can't use that as any evidence against it. Yes, I the fuck can. This is Nadine Dorris, little miss, you know, I'm not going to vote for gay marriage. I have said many, many homophobic things over my life. And then in one of her own books, she's out here comparing paedophiles to homosexuals. Nadine Dorris must be stopped. That is all I can say. That is all I can say. And now, with that horrific palate cleanser, we move forward to Partygate. Because, you know, I'm assuming you're not disgusted enough with government figures and we need to just crank it up a little bit. So that's exactly what we're going to do. So the Sue Gray report is out. It's all happening. House of Cards is toppling. But before that happened, there was a leak. Courtesy of the good people at ITV News, particularly Paul Brand, we got to see some photos of one of the parties. It's believed that it was photographs taken on the 13th of November 2020. There was alcohol all over the place, people gathered round, having a drink, raising a glass, having a fucking fabulous gay old time. And who's there? Oh, it's Boris. It's Boris Johnson. Boris Johnson is at a party. Now, this is the same Boris Johnson that stood up in the House of Commons and said that, firstly, he was like, I had no idea that there was any kind of gathering, any kind of party going on. I did not know. I have no idea what you're talking about. And I'm really angry that this could have happened. And thank you so much for bringing it to my attention. I had no idea. Oh my God, I was so mad. Oh my God, I'm disgusted to have heard that this has happened. And then he changed his story and it was, well, you know, maybe some things happened, but I'm pretty sure no rules were broken and it was all within the COVID guidelines. But you look at these pictures and it becomes very clear very quickly, that's a lie. It's a lie. I mean, everything he says is a lie, but still. One of the things I noticed in these pictures that were leaked by ITV, but also some that were included in the Sue Gray report, is that behind the scenes, when he's not in front of TV cameras and he's not with members of the public and he's not in the House of Commons and stuff like that, when he's just milling about Downing Street, Boris Johnson's hair looks normal. Like he, you know, it's all brushed, it looks nice. His clothes look nice, you know, there's, you know, no mess on his clothes, nothing like that. He looks just like a normal adult, you know, which kind of completely confirms the theory that the messy hair and the messy outfits and the, oh, I'm Boris, oh, all that shit is just a public persona. It's not real. I mean, I knew that already. It was pretty obvious, but It was nice to have it confirmed. It felt kind of vindicating to see that behind the scenes, behind the cameras, when he's just, you know, with his work colleagues, his friends, his wife, whatever, he turns all that shit off. It was nice just to have it confirmed, just for me and my pettiness. So there was a number of pictures released by ITV News. And people, they went back in time and they had a little look to see what Boris Johnson had been up to around that time. And it turned out the day after this party, Boris Johnson posted on Twitter. He posted about Diwali and he he posted a little video where he urged the Hindu community not to go ahead with any kind of celebration in person, to keep following the rules, to keep social distancing, no parties, no gatherings. But meanwhile, hours before he made that post on social media, he was at a party. We know this now. It's the audacity of this fucking bitch, really. People were obviously, they were upset, they were angry. The public was furious. And that's understandable. You know, we've gone through a lot, you know, we have. And I think the reason that this hasn't gone away, despite the government desperately trying to make it, is because there is a personal element to this. It is personal because the rest of us, we were going through difficult times. We were going through our own challenges and we were still doing what we were told to do. And to have the government repeatedly not doing that, it makes you mad. It really does. It makes you mad. I mean, this was November 2020. This was around the time I was kind of struggling to deal with, and this will sound like a small thing really, but I was kind of struggling to accept and deal with not being able to do anything for Christmas. And I know, you know, I remember at the time everyone was like, oh, but there'll always be next Christmas. Yeah, well, just about. But with COVID, you never know. At the time, I mean, this was before, because I know Christmas 2020, that was the time when they suddenly brought in the extra tier and like tons of the south of England were just suddenly told at the last minute, oh, by the way, guys, Christmas is cancelled. I had already started conceding around November time that I wasn't going to be able to do anything because I am actually pretty much the only one in my family that is not clinically vulnerable. Which, you know, before COVID, that wouldn't have really been a thing that we had to think about all that much. You know, it was just like, you know, it just meant I was the only one not taking any kind of like, you know, medication or going to the doctors a lot or whatever. But obviously with COVID, it took everything to a whole new level. And so as much as I wanted to, and having spent pretty much every Christmas ever with my family, suddenly coming round to the idea of, no, that's not going to happen. It was difficult. It was hard. And I was also very worried at the time because my mum, she lives on her own. So she was by herself and I couldn't see her and I was worried. My grandparents, you know, it was just the two of them and I was worried about that. It was just a shit time, really. You know, and I was just going through a lot generally. Would I have perhaps benefited from being able to see some people, hang out, have a couple drinks, have a chat with someone, just, you know, spend some time with somebody other than my own internal horror? Sure, but I didn't. Because, you know, we weren't allowed. I was behaving myself. No gatherings of more than a few people. Keep to the rules, stay safe, don't be a dick. Meanwhile, the government is just like, fuck it, whatever. And it turned out they'd done that a lot more times. So, you know, there were a lot of people talking about their own stories, talking about how they had not been able to have proper funerals for family members, not been able to see family members in care homes and hospitals, people sharing their experiences and how they feel. Because the government is very, very quick to dismiss these things. You know, we've talked about it quite a few times over the last few weeks because there have been, you know, journalists bringing up people's stories to ministers, including their own personal stories. Of course, there was that clip where Andrew Marr was talking about his own experience and Jacob Rees-Mogg was just so dismissive because he doesn't care. It's not clicking with him. But it turns out it's not just the public that are pissed. It turns out that there are also some in the Conservative Party that they've snapped. They're not having this anymore. Steve Baker, in particular, a Conservative MP, he posted on Twitter a picture of, there was a series of posters that the government had made and displayed in the public, one of which was a picture of a lady called Lorna, who was a COVID patient, and she was very ill. I think she's on oxygen in this picture. I'm not a doctor, I don't know. But the poster just says, look her in the eyes and tell her you never bend the rules. Stay home, protect the NHS, save lives. And he posted that a little bit after those photos leaked, which I think says it all. It's one of those situations where a picture really does say a thousand words. He's spoken before about how he is having his challenges forgiving the Prime Minister. So we'll have to wonder, won't we? We will have to wonder if other Conservatives can find the self-respect to say, not this time, Boris. I'll tell you who hasn't. It's Douglas Ross. Who's surprised? Not me. Douglas Ross, the leader of the Scottish Conservatives, and just a full-time clown. He initially, way back when he had some self-respect, called for Boris Johnson to resign over the parties. But then he U-turned and he changed his mind and he said, oh, I don't know. I don't know. I don't think so. I don't know. But then after these pictures were leaked, he changed his mind again. He went from he should resign to he should not resign back to, well, not quite he should resign, but he did say the Prime Minister must outline why he believes this behaviour was acceptable. To most, these pictures seem unjustifiable and wrong. But don't get excited, okay? Don't get excited as if he's finally, finally got his shit together and decided to stop simping for a man who does not even know his name. Because, because guess what? Guess what? He's changed his mind again. He has changed his mind again. He's now decided that Boris Johnson shouldn't resign because Ukraine. I just want to remind everyone once again that, you know, the war in Ukraine is not happening to the British people. We are not the ones who are being attacked by Russia. And it is disgusting to keep using the pain and the trauma of the Ukrainian people as a shield for a shit prime minister, right? What Boris Johnson is doing in terms of providing aid and assistance to the people of Ukraine could be done by anybody. He does not need to be at the helm for these things to happen. Anybody could be doing these things. And there are a number of government departments that can continue that assistance without Boris Johnson holding their hand through the process, and they probably would. So this idea that Boris Johnson can't go because Ukraine from Douglas Ross is absolutely pathetic enabling. I mean, what can you say? What can you say? What I found funny as well, just to drag Douglas Ross a little bit more, because, you know, it's a hobby of mine. He actually said this. He said this whole, you know, Boris shouldn't go because, you know, Ukraine thing this week. But also a source close to him said he wants and believes he will be first minister. He wants it more than Ruth Davidson did. He's not going to go, and there's no one to challenge him. What a sad, sad state the Scottish Conservatives are in. I mean, if Douglas fucking Ross is the best you've got, just pack it up, mate. Just pack it up and go home. Like, what? Girl, come on. What is that? Him? He's the best you got, girl. That is sad. That is sad, sad times at the El Royale. Oh my God. Oh dear. And the fact he thinks he's going to be first minister. Oh honey, no, that's not gonna happen. I'm so sorry. Girl, it's just not realistic. It's just not realistic. Sorry, babe. I just had to laugh. Speaking of people I have to laugh at, Desmond Swain, Conservative MP, and douche canoe, he was talking about the pictures of Boris Johnson. He said it wasn't a crime. That's your excuse? Really? And if it wasn't a crime, how come people that were at that gathering got fined? Explain that. Explain it, bitch. Oh, you can't? Okay, I see. All right. But he was interviewed by Newsnight and he said it wasn't a crime. That appears to be his attempt to defend Boris Johnson. Okay. So from what we can tell from those pictures, there was alcohol everywhere, a bit of food, way too many people than were legally permitted, and the Prime Minister at the centre of it all. Girl. And then of course, Sue Gray released her report, and I was fucking hype. I was like, yes, girl. Let me see it. Let me have a little look-see at what you got to say, Sue. It was released in the morning, just before Prime Minister's questions. And then Boris Johnson did a statement to the House. But let's have a little look and see what was in this report. Let's see what Sue saw. That was so dumb. Anyway, so lots and lots of parties, obviously, but we knew this. There were a number of parties that she covered. So there was one on the 15th of May, which was a gathering in the Downing Street Garden. She has talked about this. I have to say, I don't know about her assessment of this, but I'm not going to be petty. So there was alcohol at this event. There was wine and there was cheese, which had been brought down from the Prime Minister's flat, apparently. It was classed as an outdoor meeting that lasted between 40 minutes and an hour. Sue Gray has said that there's no reason to suggest it was anything other than a further work meeting. I don't know that I agree with that, but work. Gatherings of more than two people in public were banned at the time unless they were for essential work purposes. I don't really feel that it was justifiable. Like, are you telling me you couldn't have done that meeting over Zoom if it was going to be that many people? And did there really have to be wine and cheese there? Because I've never been to a meeting where there was wine and cheese. I have been to many, many meetings over my adult life, and that's generally not a thing. So I just, I think maybe, you know, with that one in particular, she maybe did not want to, you know, try and push it. Maybe, I don't know, but it just, I don't agree with her assessment, but there are other things I agree with, so it's fine. So for the 20th of May, there was another gathering in the Downing Street Garden. The investigation was told that this was aimed at boosting staff morale during a challenging period. Now that's interesting because I cannot think of other employers that were able to do that. It's not like, you know, at NHS hospitals, they were allowed to just gather around and have some food and alcohol to boost staff morale. That wasn't a thing. you know, and it's not like, you know, it just wasn't happening. It's not like that could happen for teachers, you know, or doctors or anything like that. Like, that wasn't a thing. So I find it funny that the government's answer is, we're trying to boost morale. Well, you know, most people just did that in other ways that didn't involve gatherings but work. So it was apparently planned in advance by officials. And the email read, please join us from 6 p.m. and bring your own booze. There were concerns raised at the time about whether it was appropriate. Boris Johnson was in attendance for around half an hour. So he was definitely there. And at the time, again, gatherings of more than two people in public were banned. The 19th of June, this is Boris Johnson's birthday. It was pre-planned. There was food, there was alcohol. A number 10 special advisor said that she had been asked to organise it. So this was deliberate. This was not some kind of spontaneous, oh, they just walked in and surprised me and ambushed me with cake. This was a deliberately planned event. So perhaps the Prime Minister didn't know it was going to happen. It is claimed in the report that the Prime Minister and the Chancellor didn't have advance knowledge of the event. But the number of people that would have been involved in organising it would have known it was going to happen, and also would have known that it was illegal. At the time, gatherings of two or more people indoors and more than six outdoors were prohibited. So this was an indoor event with more than two people. It was obviously illegal. And a number 10 special advisor had been asked to organise an illegal event and did so. So again, there's really no getting around that. And that was the event that Boris Johnson was actually fined for. We're going to get more into Boris Johnson's fines in a second, because there's a lot to go into about that. So the 13th of November, there was a gathering in Downing Street. That's the one we got the pictures from ITV News for. So there were staff in the press office area to mark the departure of Lee Kane, who was a communications chief in Downing Street. Apparently, it wasn't planned. Sure, Jan. But it did coincide with the time that regular event at Downing Street, Wine Time Friday, would have happened. So whether this was pre-planned or not, the fact that they were having events called Wine Time Friday, where they gathered and drank wine, is pretty fucking suspect to me. The Prime Minister did attend. He gave a speech and he had some drinks. After 6 p.m, a meeting was then held in the Prime Minister's flat to discuss the handling of Mr. Kane's departure and the departure of Dominic Cummings. Sue Gray said that she was only able to gather limited information on this gathering before the Metropolitan Police began investigating. So that's pretty suspect. And we're going to get to the pretty suspect happenings of the Met as well in a bit. At the time, again, indoor gatherings for more than two people were banned. And then there was more of this going on the 16th of April. There were two separate leaving events that took place at number 10 Downing Street, with alcohol, with speeches. And then, so there's two parties going on: alcohol, speeches, gathering, having a good time, socialising. These two parties then came together to make one big party. Because that's a thing. This was the one where there were some children's toys in the garden at Downing Street that were damaged. And staff members stayed until the early hours, with the last person leaving at 20 past four in the fucking morning. And at this time, gatherings of two or more people indoors or more than six outdoors were illegal. So, okay, so there was some pictures included in the report. This was for the birthday party for Boris Johnson. Now, On the table, you can see there's drinks. There's, that looks like alcohol, I think. There's some sandwiches. A whole bunch of stuff going on. You can see Boris Johnson raising a, I think that's a can of Coke. There's also some more pictures in there from the 13th of November as well. Boris Johnson, once again, raising a glass. So at this point, any kind of anything Boris Johnson says is pretty much invalid, because you can look back at him repeatedly saying, oh, but, you know, I didn't know rules were broken. Oh, I wasn't there. Oh, maybe I was there, but I didn't know it was going to happen. Oh, it wasn't that bad. Oh, I'm really sorry. Oh, fuck. I'm so sorry. Like, it's all, it doesn't mean anything. Nothing that Boris Johnson has offered as an excuse, as a reason, anything, none of it matters. Literally none of it, because you look at this report and it becomes so clear that they did not care at all. They didn't care. They felt that it was their right. They're entitled to have fun. They're entitled to wine time Fridays. They're entitled to have a laugh and have some drinks and break children's toys and fucking fuck about till like 4 a.m. They're allowed to do that because they're at Downing Street, and who are we to question that? That was very much the attitude I got from a lot of this. There were some other details in the report. One of the things that has really stuck with people, and I completely understand why, because it says a lot about the kind of people that we have working at Downing Street. So Sue Gray noticed that there were multiple examples of a lack of respect and poor treatment of security and cleaning staff. And that was one of the things that has really stuck with people. People are genuinely really angry about this because, well, it's not hard to be nice. Do you know what I mean? It really isn't. It's not hard to be polite and to say please and thank you and to be kind and respectful to people who are helping you, especially at a time when there is a global health emergency, there's a pandemic, and you have security staff and cleaning staff who are literally risking their health to come to work and clean up after you. It's not fucking hard to be polite and to be respectful and to try and make their jobs a bit easier by not acting like fucking animals. There was parts of the report where they were talking about, you know, people throwing up and drinks being spilt up the wall. I don't even understand how that happens, but apparently it did. There was wine up the wall. Like, how the fuck? You know what I mean? So these people are acting like fucking animals. And then they have the audacity to then be rude to the people that they've just made a ton more work for. You're fucking throwing up, you're spilling drinks everywhere, you're spilling food all over the place. And then you have the nerve, the fucking audacity to be rude to the people that are risking their health to come into work to clean up after you. You dirty, disgusting pig. No. Could not be me. Could not be fucking me. There was a detail that was released after the report came out. It was covered in an episode of Panorama by the BBC, and they talked about how the security staff at Number 10 asked people not to attend these events. They were asking people that were there to go home, because they believe that their behaviour was unlawful. There were emails sent to staff asking them to stop having gatherings because they were unlawful. Apparently, a member of staff laughed at one of the security staff that was giving these warnings and forced them out of the room. And then you look at these reports of this behaviour from Sue Gray and it all suddenly clicks. These are entitled people. I mean, they're obviously entitled. They felt that they were allowed to have fucking parties while the rest of us were under restrictions. They have the entitlement to be making a mess. I mean, I don't get that at all. Like, even in my own home, right, where you know, I live, it's my house. If I spilled something on the floor, I would clean it up right away. I'd be so embarrassed. If someone else went to clean it up for me, I'd be so embarrassed. I'd be even more embarrassed if I was out in public and I spilled something, made a mess, inconvenienced everybody, and then someone else went to clear it up. I'd be so embarrassed. But these are clearly people that would just stand there and be like, oh, it's fine. It's fine. You know, it's their job. Make them do it. You know, so the fact that they would then become even more rude and belligerent when told, you shouldn't be here. You shouldn't be having this party. It says it all. It really, really fucking says everything you need to know about these people. The fact that they think that they should be allowed to have these parties in the first place. And then they are just walking around treating members of staff who would have way less work to do if they weren't having these fucking parties in the first place. But these members of staff who are risking their health to come into work and then facing abuse from these drunk, pathetic, messy, dirty, spoiled little bitches. It's horrible. And I think that's probably why that is one of the points from the report that has really stuck with people. There was some other stuff in there about how there were members of staff working in Downing Street who had felt unable to raise concerns about other people's behaviour, which makes a lot of sense when you see how people who did raise those concerns were treated. They were mocked, they were bullied, they were verbally abused, they had people being rude to them. So, of course, other people who are seeing these things and feel uncomfortable with it happening are going to feel as well, I can't do that because the same thing's going to happen to me. So she did also talk about the fact that there were some recommendations that have been made and have been implemented, stuff like a policy covering the consumption of alcohol in the workplace. But what I would say is if you reach a point where you have to implement a policy like that, it's probably too late. Like, it's too far gone, really. it just is, like, sorry. And there have been changes to the organisation and management of Downing Street. So there was some extra details that did come out after, one of which I found deeply disturbing, if I'm honest. So, oh dear. So there have been text messages that have found their way to the Sunday Times, from Carrie Johnson, Boris Johnson's wife, which appear to show that Carrie had a gathering at the number 11 Downing Street flat on the evening of Boris Johnson's birthday. This had been rumoured for a long time, but Downing Street had denied it constantly. But there now appears to be proof that it definitely did happen and that There was a lot of lying going on. There has been a lot of lying going on. So we now know, you know, Boris Johnson has given another round of apologies this week. But he didn't mention this, did he? So once again, his apologies are just full of shit. There was also a leak from a Downing Street official who said that Sue Gray investigated claims that two couples were caught having sex in the building on the night that Dominic Cummings and Lee Kane left number 10. But she did not find enough evidence to put it in the report. However, for her to start looking into that, there must have been at least a few people that saw it and told her, or were aware of it and told her. So I believe that that happened. I'm not going to lie. But again, this is just the entitlement, you know, people having sex at work. Like, what the fuck is that? What the fuck kind of deviancy is that? That's disgusting. Especially when we now know the state that these people left Downing Street in. You probably catch something. Ew. There was also claims that Martin Reynolds, who was the former principal private secretary, who left after organising one of the parties in question, used to pretend that Boris Johnson was in meetings so that he could cover for Boris Johnson when he was having afternoon naps. So apparently Boris Johnson used to just have a little snooze and Martin Reynolds would cover for him. I mean, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. Apart from just screaming into the void. So we've got staff partying till 4 a.m, wine being strewn up the walls, vomit all over the place, cleaning staff and security staff being abused, bins overflowing with bottles apparently, members of staff saying, please can you stop having parties, it's illegal, and being laughed at and being abused and being bullied. And then, cherry on the fucking cake, there was a message sent, by a member of staff discussing one of the parties, in which they said, we seem to have got away with it. Uh-uh, bitch. I don't think. It was disgusting. There were a number of conservatives coming forward after the report came out to affirm their positions. There were quite a few that were behind Boris. It was very strange because multiple conservative MPs, including many in the cabinet, were all putting out almost identical tweets that were basically, you know, basically can be summarized as, you know, well, the report's out now. Boris has said sorry, he's got a lot he's getting on with, stop talking about it. Which, I mean, who's surprised, you know? Who is surprised at that level of simping? Because it seems to be a common thing going through the Conservative Party. But Mark Harper, Conservative MP, he had something different to say. He said, my colleagues, the decent men and women of the Conservative Party, are being asked to go out and defend the indefensible. A proper leader wouldn't ask their own team to do this. He was also speaking on Politics Live on the BBC, and he said, I'm fed up with my colleagues who are being asked to go out on the television day after day and saying things that are frankly ridiculous. I agree. Write a letter of no confidence and fucking challenge the bitch. Just do it. I could use some summer drama. Just do it. There were a number of Conservative MPs going anonymously to journalists and complaining about how Boris Johnson was apologising publicly but seemed to show no contrition behind the scenes, or, you know, Boris Johnson made them feel embarrassed, and Boris Johnson was leading to them getting loads of letters and emails from constituents, and it was annoying and all that. And just a lot of Tories complaining privately to journalists but never having the guts to actually go out and do something, like, for example, people like Mark Harper and Steve Baker are doing. I mean, you know, do I agree with them politically? Of course not. Do I really respect them on the whole? Probably not, but I respect that one action, you know what I mean? But, you know, it was frustrating seeing a lot of Conservatives who were whining anonymously but not doing anything else. And it's like, well, you're the ones that have any kind of power here. Me personally, all I can do is look at him and repeatedly yell, resign, bitch, fucking resign, stand down, get the fuck out of Downing Street, bitch. But I have no real power until the next election. And even then, I only get one vote. But you, as Conservative MPs, you have power here. You can call for him to resign publicly. You can put in letters of no confidence in him and try and trigger a leadership election that way, you know, by getting that no confidence vote. You could resign from the Conservative Party and you could sit as independent. You know, maybe that's not going to change who the Prime Minister is, but it knocks his majority down by one for each person that does it, and it sends a clear message. Nobody is forcing you to stay on the good ship Boris Johnson. You can do something else, but if all you're going to do is whine to journalists anonymously, then you can't be surprised when everybody tars you with the same brush, because that's what's going to happen. I feel like a lot of Conservatives don't seem to understand this, and it was very apparent during the local elections that were happening in England, where you had a lot of Conservative candidates who were saying, oh, you know, don't punish us for what's happening at Westminster. But it's like, well, unless you're going to actually stand up and say something and condemn it and, you know, do something to show that you don't stand with that, what else are we supposed to do? If you don't have the fucking courage to stand against Boris Johnson and his misconduct, how are we supposed to not tar you with the same brush? You are literally picking up the brush and handing it to us. What do you want us to do? Like, come on, man. Anyway, so the public remain pissed. There are 59% of people polled by YouGov that believe Boris Johnson should resign. And as time goes on, I imagine that's going to go up. People are fucking sick of him, and I love that for us. There was a report that a senior number 10 official was actually given early access to parts of the Sue Gray report, which Downing Street finally did admit after pretending that they hadn't for a very long time. Whether anything was changed or not, we don't know. But the fact that they felt that they deserved early access, again, says a lot. There are a lot of people questioning the police on this, especially as we had photos that clearly showed breaches of the COVID guidelines and rules that we all had to live by for fear of fucking fines and shit. There were a number of pictures of Boris Johnson that should have led to a fine if the Metropolitan Police were doing their jobs. But it appeared they just didn't want to, I guess. I don't know. Like, I don't know what's going on with them. But there was a session in the London Assembly where the acting commissioner of the Metropolitan Police, Stephen House, was asked about this in particular. He was asked whether or not the Prime Minister was fined for Lee Kane's Leaving Party. He refused to answer that, even though the answer is clear, because the Prime Minister was fined for one party in particular, and that was his birthday party, and that was announced by the Metropolitan Police. When they announced that they'd done their investigation, they'd given out all the fines, it was made clear that the Prime Minister had not been fined again. He'd only been fined once for the birthday party. So it's obvious he was not fined for the Lee Kane leaving party. There we go. There's so many parties, I can't keep up. So he was only fined for one, for his birthday. He was not fined for the Lee Kane leaving party, of which we now have photos showing that he was present. He was involved. And he was drinking and he was having fun and yada, yada, yada. He was definitely there. He was definitely breaking the rules. Question is, why wasn't he fined? The police won't tell us. They won't even tell us whether he was or whether he wasn't. We know he wasn't, but they won't talk. They don't want to talk. They are, you know, mouth shut, head empty. Don't want to fucking talk about it. So he said, I believe that the decisions my officers made were based on the facts and were proper. I believe you're full of shit, mate. Come the fuck on, bitch. What are you saying? It was reported later in the week that one of the reasons that many senior staff were not fined for some events that junior staff were fined for, including stuff probably like this party that Boris was photographed at but received no fine for, is because the questionnaires that the police used to to conduct their investigation. So what they did is they sent out questionnaires to people, you know, asking them questions, you know, were you at this event, were you at that event, yada, yada, yada. There were a number of senior staff that didn't return the questionnaires and so therefore weren't fined. So this man is stood here like, oh yeah, I think my officers did a good job. And I'm like, no, they didn't. I'm sorry to break it to you, mate, but did they fuck? They absolutely did not. You're full of shit. This is a nonsense. The Labour Party decided to be funny. They decided they have fucking jokes this week. They brought up all of the advertising on the Conservative Home website, which is a popular news website from a Conservative perspective. It's not actually affiliated to the Conservative Party. I know some people got a bit confused about that. It's not directly connected to the Conservative Party. It's just a right-wing news website, you know, in the same way that there are, you know, some Labour sympathetic news websites. Anyway, so Labour bought up all their advertising and they posted some graphics on there with a picture of a member of staff from the NHS, I'm assuming that's supposed to be. She's got mask on. What's that word? Goggles? Like eye goggles? I don't know what fucking doctors and shit wear, do I? But anyway, so it says, look into her eyes and tell her you still back Boris Johnson. Labour decided to be trolls this week and I support them in that. Shout out to them. So Paul Holmes, who is a Conservative MP and was also a ministerial aide to the Home Secretary, has quit his post as ministerial aide, citing the toxic culture at number 10 Downing Street. And he said that he wants to focus solely on being a member of parliament as his work has been tarnished by the events. Fair enough. And like I said, at least he has the courage and the guts to actually stand up and say something out loud rather than hiding and being a fucking coward. I respect that. Like, fair enough. Fair fuck enough. But what did Boris do? What did Boris Johnson do? So he did this fucking little statement at the House of Commons and he was like, well, I'm sorry and I apologized before and I'm sorry. And then he listed a bunch of reasons as to why it was all fine, actually, which, fuck that. And then he was like, oh well, you know, we're changing things and things are gonna get better and you know, we need to just get on with things now and we need to move on. No, bitch. But he was trying to play the part of, you know, the apologetic, full of contrition, you know, oh I'm so sorry, little Boris. Which was full of shit. It was full of shit. It was absolutely fucking full of shit. Because just in the same week that he's apologizing and he's saying, I'm sorry, my bad, I'm going to learn, I'm going to grow, I'm going to be better, I'm going to do better, yada, yada, yada. He then waters down the ministerial code, which all ministers are supposed to follow, but rarely do these days. It's been updated to say that ministers found to have breached the code will no longer automatically be expected to resign or be fired from their posts. They can now offer some form of public apology, remedial action, or removal of ministerial salary for a period. So he's basically sorting it out for the next time that he fucks up. So all he has to do is just come before us and say, oh, I'm really, really sorry. I'm sorry. I've been a very bad Boris, but it won't happen again, even though we all know it will. A public apology from Boris Johnson is worthless. Like, we've talked about this, because it's such an oversaturated market. Like, it's non-stop all the time. I feel like this man's apologising all the fucking time. And I don't want to hear it. I don't want him to fucking apologise to me. I want him to actually take responsibility. Because throughout his statement, he kept saying, I'm taking full responsibility. I'm taking full responsibility. But then he still stood there, not doing that at all. Like, at all, in any sense of the word. And then straight after he does that, he changes the ministerial code so that he never has to take responsibility again. He can just offer up yet another unwanted fake fucking apology that none of us believe and none of us want. And that's enough. He doesn't have to do anything else. So where is the taking responsibility? Where is it? Because I'm not fucking seeing it. It is not apparent to me. It's not a thing. It's not real. It's not real. It's just not. But there have been 24 Conservative MPs at the point of me recording this who have publicly called on the Prime Minister to resign. It's not known yet whether all of them have put in letters of no confidence in him that could trigger a vote in no confidence, but we'll see how that unfolds over the next few weeks. I hope they all do, and I mean that sincerely. Maybe, you know, I'm never gonna be somebody that votes Conservative or supports the Conservative Party. I'm not made that way. It's just not gonna happen. But I would at the very least respect somebody a bit more if they did that, you know, because it's like, have some dignity and have some respect for the people that allow you to do the job you're doing, you know, because yes, I'm sure that there are very difficult elements of being a member of parliament, of course, but there are also a great number of privileges, the high wages for one, the expenses, all the free shit they get, getting to be part of the decision making process on everything, you know. It's a huge privilege, as well as, you know, being a challenging job. And their communities put so much faith and trust in them. So it would be good to see more Conservative MPs showing that they deserve that, showing that they deserve that faith and that trust by acting in their constituents' best interests instead of thinking about what the Prime Minister is clearly asking them to do. This is not about saving the job of an incompetent and horrible man. That should not be your priority. Your priority should be doing what is best for the people that allow you to have that job. Because I think this may be something that's going to stick in people's minds. I really do. And if I were a Conservative MP, I would be thinking, it's time to put my own people first here. I cannot put myself on the line to save this man. I can't do it. Like, these people, they voted for me. They put their faith in me. It's time for me to do right by them. That should be what people are doing. Whether they're going to or not, I don't know. But we'll see. So what else happened this week? Jacob Rees-Mogg was interviewed by Beth Rigby, and he decided to talk about abortion. Because, you know, we were all wondering, what does the haunted Postman Pat doll that looms over Westminster believe women ought to be doing with their bodies? That was the question on everybody's lips, you know. So he said, belief is very important and that it saddens him that churches aren't fuller. Okay. And he said the saddest aspect of modern British life is that 200,000 babies every year aren't born because they're aborted. And it was a terrible, terrible tragedy. I'm sorry. That to him is the saddest thing. That is the saddest aspect of modern British life, that abortion happens. Actually, I would say, me personally, that I believe the saddest aspect of British life is that in the UK, one of the richest nations in the world, there are still children that go to school hungry. I think that's a lot sadder than abortion, actually. I think that elderly people who've worked their whole lives having to choose between food and putting on the heating, I think that's a bit sadder than abortion, actually. I think that nurses having to go to food banks, I think that's a bit sadder than abortion, actually. I think that people having to live on the streets because they've got nowhere else to go, I think that's a bit sadder than abortion, Jacob. I think those, all those things and more, you know, I think all of that is much, much worse and a far sadder aspect of British life than women having abortions, to be frank. I have to be honest, I just don't care what somebody that cannot ever be pregnant thinks about abortion. Like, I am very much of the no uterus, no opinion kind of persuasion. Because what has it got to do with him? He will never know what pregnancy is like. He will never know. He'll also never know, actually, what it's like to raise a child because, you know, it's public knowledge that all of his were basically raised by an army of nannies. So it's not like he even knows the key aspects of parenting, really. So it's not his fucking business, you know. This fucking bitch. You know, I mean, he did say, you know, oh, well, you know, it's legal and there's no prospect, of Parliament voting to ban abortion, despite his feelings on abortion. Oh, well, thank you so much, Jacob. I really appreciate that. But, you know, I'm just saying it's pretty funny that he doesn't believe in things that you'll find Jesus talking about, such as, you know, feed the hungry, take care of the poor, you know, look after disabled people, be nice to others, you know, don't fucking judge people, don't be horrible, you know. there's actually nothing wrong with divorced women. You know, Jacob Rees-Mogg, he doesn't subscribe to any of those ideas. But, you know, stuff like abortion, that sets off his fucking tear ducts. And he's like, oh, I'm so sad that women are accessing healthcare. Oh, my God. Actually, sorry, that voice wasn't... Hang on, let me try again. I'm so sad that... Oh, God, that's more Margaret Thatcher. I can't do Jacob Rees' voice's... Jacob Rees-Mogg's voice, because I have a soul and I feel like you could only access that voice if you don't have one. But nevertheless, it's just like very posh whinging about things that are not his fucking concern. You know, I just, you know, he doesn't care about all the stuff Jesus was actually all about. Like, you know, be nice, look after people, have a fucking sense of community, be there for people, help the people that are suffering. Be kind, be nice. But, you know, he'll stand there and be like, abortion is wrong because I think maybe Jesus probably said something. I don't know. And fuck the gays. But don't let them fuck and don't let them marry, for God's sake. And, you know, if those babies were born, all 200,000 of them, he would not give a fuck how they were kept alive. Like, if those babies were born to poor families, he'd be like, well, you shouldn't have had children if you couldn't afford them. And it's like, but Jacob, you didn't want the mother to have an abortion. And, you know, what do you want her to do? She can't access any help if she's poor and she cannot afford to feed that baby. But she also can't have an abortion because that's going to offend your fucking sensibilities. What do you want her to do? What do you want her to do, bitch? Let me tell you a little personal story about myself, because this is my podcast, so it is what it is. But I actually, when I was a kid, I did believe that abortion was wrong. I mean, I wasn't like going on fucking anti-abortion marches or standing outside abortion clinics yelling at people or anything like that. Like, I was I wasn't that far gone, but I did believe that abortion was wrong. However, growing up and actually looking into it and not just believing blindly what I had been, you know, told by people that were very invested in the idea of telling me what to think, because a lot of the time that is how it be. and also I think, you know, as I grew up being around, you know, strong feminist figures like, you know, like my mum and my grandma, kind of breaking away from that idea that, you know, women exist for, you know, populating the earth and whatever, seeing, you know, my mom and my grandma being so much more than that, and having those good role models, and then talking to them about these things and saying, okay, so what do you think? And them telling me, you know, different things, different perspectives, and being able to look at it in a different way. I changed my mind, and I was like, okay, so this isn't, you know, it's not like a malicious, terrifying, we're off to kill some babies kind of thing. It's a healthcare decision. You know, it's a woman making a decision about what happens to her body. Okay. And I realized I had been wrong. However, when I had been wrong, I was a child. I was literally a child, walking around with my wrong opinions. I was not a fully grown adult with an incredibly important job that allowed me to make decisions about other people's life. I was not a fucking government minister. I was not fucking 53 years old, you know? Like, I was a child. So to me, it's kind of pathetic that he's still out here like this, but work. I guess this fucking sad, cringe, nouveau riche, pathetic little man baby is gonna man baby, you know what I mean? Like, it is what it is, you know? These kind of people will run around doing this shit. I mean, look, let me just put it to you like this, okay? Jacob Rees-Mogg is a man that famously said he had never changed a nappy in his life. And he wants to talk. He wants to talk about what anybody should be doing in regards to becoming a parent. He's out here openly admitting he can't even change nappies, which is like... Like, I have no children, right? But I know how to do that because I've done that before. You know, just helping out, you know, like my friends that have kids and whatever. If even I know the basics of shit like that, then a man who appears to have like a million kids He ought to have got to grips with it, but he doesn't. And this bitch is out here like, you know, actually women can't have healthcare. That's not a thing that I'm going to allow because I'm a fucking man and I think I should be in charge of everything. Well, you know what? No. No, bitch. No. I find it funny that there are absolutely no women in political power that are walking around trying to deny men things like vasectomies or, you know, anything like that. No one's saying to them, you can't have your, you know, fertility healthcare or whatever. You can't do that. No one's saying that. No women are telling men that, but men feel that they can just run around doing that. It's funny. I mean, you know, me personally, this is I'm probably never going to have to worry about getting pregnant ever again. If I do get pregnant, it's going to be a very, very, very deliberate thing that I do. But I really am moving more towards adoption, I can't lie. That's a discussion for later, Jennifer, because I am not yet in a position to do that. But, you know, I'm probably not going to have to worry about pregnancy. But unlike, you know, people like Jacob Rees-Mogg, I don't believe that the world revolves around me. And I believe that women having access to healthcare is incredibly important. Yes, I may not use it. And yes, people like him may not agree with it. But none of that fucking matters. What's important is that women have safe, quick access to healthcare. That's all. Fuck his feelings. Who cares what he thinks? It doesn't matter. And now, on to someone who very much does matter. We are talking about Nazanin Zaghari-Ratcliffe. She gave an interview. She was talking to Women's Hour. And she said something in this interview that, honestly, it disgusted me and it broke my heart for her and her family. So she talked about how she was forced into signing a confession, and that the Foreign Office agreed for that to happen as part of the terms of her release, and that the Foreign Office were complicit in her being forced to sign a letter of false confession. And I just, this poor woman and her family have suffered so much, and it pretty much all can be traced back to incompetence within the Foreign Office, whether it is Boris Johnson as Foreign Secretary during his time as Foreign Secretary, getting her into trouble by just making up some absolute shit about her being a journalist when she wasn't, and training journalists and all this shit. A succession of foreign secretaries that failed to get her home. And now this revelation that the Foreign Office were complicit in her being forced to sign a confession, a false confession. It's just absolutely revolting. And the worst part is that the government does not seem to want to take any accountability whatsoever. They are just ignoring the suffering that she went through and the horrific ordeal that her and her family have been put through at their hands. They don't care. And I just, I mean, how do you ever trust a government again that has done this to somebody? How? This is what they did to her, you know. They stole years of her life. They failed her on a massive scale. And anytime she wants to talk about it, anytime she wants any kind of accountability, crickets, silence. They don't want to talk. They don't want to talk about what they did to her. And it's sick. All I hope is that one day she'll get closure. I hope some compensation too, I'm not going to lie. And that we can make sure this never happens to anyone else again. But I don't think that it's possible for us to make sure it never happens again to anybody else while the current administration is in power, because I don't think anybody involved can stop it from happening again. I don't think they have it in them. I really don't. Actually, I'm going to do something lighter and come back to that one on my notes. So there was a councillor called William Gannon in Wales who has stood down from his local council due to allegations that he is Banksy. I mean... Oh my god. So Banksy is like a street artist person thing. Like Banksy goes around and does like graffiti art or something. I don't really know. I'm not really super into visual art in that sense. But nobody knows who Banksy is. Like it's a big secret apparently. And there were a number of allegations, apparently, that Councillor William Gannon was actually Banksy. And so he stood down as he said that the allegations were undermining his ability to work on the council. I mean, okay. Although surely resigning would make people think you're Banksy more, because if you're not a counsellor anymore, you've got more time to do pictures. I would actually love that though, if Banksy was just like a random town councillor from Wales. That'd be really funny. That would be so funny. I would absolutely love that. Some good news for Nicola Sturgeon this week, as she has now become this week Scotland's longest serving First Minister. We love to see it. Congratulations, Queen. Love that for you. Very happy for you. Great job. There were some absolutely unhinged reports in the Russian media this week. apparently, Russian news outlets are claiming that food insecurity in the UK will lead to cannibalism. I don't think we're quite there yet. Like, sorry to disappoint the Russian media, but I don't think we're there yet. I mean, things are pretty dire, I'm not going to lie. The cost of living crisis is certainly biting, but we're not biting each other. So that's good news. Unless some of you are. Oh my God, if you are, you have to tell me. That's like hot gossip. Ooh. Imagine if I start the podcast next week with an interview with a cannibal. That would be so fun. No, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do it. If you are a cannibal, don't let me know, because that'd be terrifying. but speaking of the cost of living crisis, the government have finally decided to fucking do something. But they've insisted that it's absolutely just a strange coincidence that they made these sudden announcements in the same week that the Sue Gray report came out and everyone was pissed at the government. I don't quite believe that personally myself, especially because a lot of this help that's being announced is not going to be immediately available. So if this was something that they'd organised in advance, you'd expect for the help to be coming straight away rather than in a couple of weeks or in some cases a couple of months. So I don't really believe them that it was just a strange coincidence that's happened this week. I think it was a very deliberate, oh fuck, everyone's pissed at us, let's announce some shit. So the previously announced loan for energy payments, it was £200 everyone was going to get, and then you had to pay it back over the next couple of years to go towards your energy bills. That has now been doubled to £400, and they have removed the requirement for everyone to pay it back. So I mean, okay, but That's still not coming until autumn. I don't really know what I'm supposed to do until then. But cute, I guess, work. There have been announcements made of additional payments for people on means-tested benefits, as well as pensioners and disabled people. That's great. I would have liked to seen those payments coming a bit quicker. Again, like I said, you know, it does appear that this was kind of put together at the last minute, because there is quite a gap between now and when these payments are going to start being made. I would like for them to, you know, for the help to be a bit more immediate, because people are suffering right now. So knowing something is coming, is on the horizon, is great, but you know, for people that are really struggling, that the help is going to need to be here sooner than it's actually going to be, which is a bit disappointing. It was confirmed by journalists who spoke to the Treasury that the £400 energy bill discount is going to absolutely everybody, including wealthy people who probably don't need it. And also, it will be going to people with second homes. So, for example, if you have a second home, honestly can't relate, but if you do, you would get the £400 payment for your first home, and then you would get another one for your second home. So that's a bit fucking grim, really, isn't it? Because, I mean, I'm sorry, but if you can afford to have two homes, you probably don't need the help. But that's the government for you. Rishi Sunak said that he will be giving the £400 that he'll be getting in the discount to a charity. Okay. It's not like he's going to miss it, to be honest. It's not like he's going to miss it. So this week, and this was the thing, I had to get some positive stuff out to make sure that we're not going from something sad to something really depressing. So Imran Khan, who's a former Conservative MP who was recently convicted of sexually assaulting a child and was bizarrely defended multiple times by current Conservative MP Crispin Blunt. Imran Khan has been sentenced to 18 months for the sexual assault of a child. He will be imprisoned. I have to say, it did seem, in my opinion, to be a very lenient sentence, considering the huge effects that it would have had on the victim. I have to be honest, I do. I feel the victim deserved better than that, personally. I know that, you know, prisons, you know, the purpose isn't just punishment. Obviously, there is rehabilitation on top of that, but it just seems very, very small in comparison to what the victim would have went through. I don't know. I found that upsetting, to be honest. There is also questions still to be asked of the Conservative Party about their handling of this. The victim did go to the Conservative Party and make them aware of what had happened, and yet Imran Khan was still allowed to stand for election. So, obviously, now that he has been convicted and he has been sentenced, it should be the case that the Conservatives are willing to answer these questions. Whether they are or not, I don't know. I'm going to be real. I don't think they probably will. I think they want to push this as far away as possible. They don't want to talk about it right now. But they should, because the fact is the victim did come forward and he did try and make them aware of it, and was dismissed completely. And the victim has been failed in a number of ways here. You know, the fact that he was dismissed by the Conservatives, this frankly incredibly lenient sentence, the very least the Conservative Party can do is do a proper investigation and a proper, honest, open inquiry as to how this man was ever allowed to stand for their party. Will they actually do that, though? I don't know. I don't know. Speaking of members of parliament who've been convicted, Claudia Webb lost an appeal this week against her harassment conviction. My God. So Claudia Webb, a former Labour MP, she is still a member of parliament. She's just been kicked out of the Labour Party. So she was convicted for a campaign of harassment. She did appeal her conviction, but she lost that appeal. I mean, what do you even say? One of the things that she said, I mean, this shit was so dumb. She said that the alleged comments were abhorrent to her, citing her strict Church of England upbringing. She claimed she would never abuse another woman, explaining, "My birthday is on the 8th of March. It is International Women's Day. It has also been a great pride to me that I celebrate the rights of women. I have never used expletives or sworn in my life. It is something to do with my upbringing. I had a strict religious upbringing in the Church of England." Girl, don't do all that. Don't fucking do all that. Oh my God. Listen, this whole thing, this fucking messy behaviour, right? Like, girl. Imagine fucking throwing it all away, ruining your life, getting a criminal record, a criminal fucking record over some guy. Honey, no, we gotta be better than this. At her big age too, fucking 57, playing the fool. Girl. Convicted up on the fucking dock. Girl. I could not be me. It could not be me. So during the appeal, it was decided that the 10-week suspended sentence that she received should be reduced to community service, but that the conviction itself still stood. So if you're not aware of what this trial was about, by the way, if you're not too sure what's been occurring, she was charged with harassment. It was alleged that she had been making threatening phone calls, harassing a woman, and it's alleged that she used a derogatory term towards this woman and said to her, "You should be acid." And also that she threatened to send naked images of this woman to her family and was heard in a call to be shouting, "Get out of my relationship." Girl. Girl, let me tell you. Let me fucking tell you this. Let me fucking tell you. Was it worth it? Was it worth it, girl? For a man. I'm the wrong person to ask about this, obviously, because I am not attracted to any man at all. But I'm looking at a picture of this man, and what is special about him, honey? God, throwing your whole career, your life away for this. This is like fucking 14-year-old's behaviour. What is this, girl? Why? Anyway, God, they split up as well. She throws her whole life away for this man, her reputation, everything for this man, and then she ends up splitting up with him anyway. Girl. A sad, sad state of affairs. Could not be me. Girl. I would say, in my opinion, I would say that this would make Claudia Webb unsuitable to be an MP, frankly. You can't be out here threatening people, girly. You cannot be doing that, especially over something like that. But like over anything, like out here threatening people, girl, really? But she's not standing down. She wants to stay as a member of parliament, and because she was not given a custodial sentence of over 12 months, she can just stick around, and that appears to be what she's doing. She is staying as an independent. I think that's pretty fucked up if you ask me. I mean, look, I don't like my member of parliament, because obviously we disagree ideologically in that. And I disagree with a lot of things that he's done as the member of parliament. But he's not a criminal that I'm aware of. And if he was convicted of a crime, especially a crime like that, that involved threatening behaviour, I would feel deeply uncomfortable with that. So I feel sorry for the people of her constituency, personally. I feel bad for them. Let's talk about Wakefield. There's a by-election coming up in Wakefield. And there was an absolutely unhinged piece of election material that was posted on social media from a candidate who... he's called Paul Bickerdike. Interesting name. And he had this to say. I have been a foster carer for 14 years and have never sexually assaulted anyone. I am happily married to Janet. I believe we need to have people in Parliament who have strong morals as an example to everyone in the nation, especially our young people. The fact the Conservative Party are allowing their MPs to have the most appalling morals, including excusing sexual assault and promoting the idea of offering sex for reward, okay, shows that party is no longer fit to govern. The other main party's morals are, if anything, even worse. That's a strong opener. I have never sexually assaulted anyone. Well, you know what, Paul? Neither have I. I, too, have never sexually assaulted anyone. But I don't understand what that's got to do with anything. That should be the default setting for everybody. Nobody should have sexually assaulted anybody. It doesn't make you fucking special because you haven't sexually assaulted anybody, Paul. And, you know, look, I'm sure that many of the members of parliament that have been found to have sexually assaulted anybody would have said themselves, I've never sexually assaulted anybody. And they would be lying. So I'm not going to lie to you. Like, I'm not saying you have, but, you know, I'm just saying, I don't know why you expect me to believe that you haven't. But that was just a little bit of unhinged content for the week. Keep us ticking on and trucking by. But yeah, Paul has never sexually assaulted anybody, you guys. And it's really important that we know that. And I'm really glad that we have that information. Thank you so much. The Jubilee is coming. The Queen's Platinum Jubilee. Or maybe it already happened. I don't fucking know. I think it's next week or something. I know we get 2 bank holidays next week, which is nice. And I like that. Thanks, Liz. I don't really have any plans for the Jubilee because I'm not a monarchist, and I don't really care for the royal family. Like, I don't want anything bad to happen to them, obviously, because I'm not mean, but, like, I just don't care. So I'm just, like, I don't have any, like, plans or anything. I'm just going to be, like, taking some me time, you know, doing my thing. Like, I appreciate the time off, but I'm not doing anything royal family related with it. Boris Johnson has some plans though. He wants to announce that imperial measurements will be revived to mark the Queen's Platinum Jubilee. Okay. All right then. What the fuck? Who asked for this? Like, who actually needs it? What for? This is so stupid. It's such a nonsense thing. He's like, oh, you know what we'll do? That. We'll tell them we're bringing back imperial measurements. They'll fucking love it. They'll go mad for it. It'll be fabulous. Shut the fuck up, Boris. Shut the fuck up. Go take a nap. You're more useful to us when you're napping than you are when you're fucking alive and awake and talking. Just be quiet. Go have a sleep. Get out of the way and let proper grown-ups do the work. Honestly, it's the kind of dumb fuck shit that he would say. Like, I'm not disputing that's true, because I believe it is entirely. But just shut the fuck up, Boris. Just shut the fuck up. Be quiet and shut the fuck up with your stupid ideas. Oh my God. Okay, besties, so that's all for this week, but I will be back again next week with a new podcast giving you all the tea, all the news and all the gossip. If you enjoyed this show, thank you so much. I'd really appreciate a rating or a review. And I will see you again next time. Love you, bye.
What the actual fuck is going on with this whole politics business?
The stuff about me paddleboarding, nonsense. The sea was actually closed. It was a red notice.
When Kermit the Frog, sang, "It's not easy being green." You remember that one?
Russia should go away, should shut up.
Try, that's a dodgy view.
And have you been to Peppa Pig World? Who's been to, has anybody who's been to Peppa Pig World?
In December, I'll be in Beijing, opening up new pork markets.
Like, seriously, what the fuck?